This is Frank Costanza.
What do you want?
You think you can keep us out of Florida?
We're moving in lock, stock, and barrel. We're going to be in a pool. We're going to be in a clubhouse. We're going to be all over that shuffleboard court. And I dare you to keep me out!
Hey there, welcome to the League Life podcast with Brooksy and Shanaz. I'm Shanaz, I'm here with Brooksy. We are also calling this the Lockdown Life podcast. Brooksy, how are you going?
Yes, Shanaz, I'm good. I'm pretty good. I'm feeling good. I'm actually a bit sore from a run yesterday, but mate, it was a big night of TV last night. Weekend was good. Worked on Fox League Live, worked with Maddie, Fletch and Hindy on Sunday, which was great. Pretty loose show. It was funny being in the chair for that one. You just didn't know what was coming. Billy Moore was awesome. We had Kevy, we had Gordy. It's been a good week. I've really enjoyed this week. Good weather still for May or whatever month it is. Do you know what month it is, Shaz?
Yeah, we're in May now. I have to say your positivity is outstanding given we're in a pandemic.
Oh, it's great. Great, Schnatz. I love it. I'm enjoying it. I hate to say it, but I'm just, you know, really settling in. I don't know. I know there's a lot of people out there that are absolutely hating it for multiple reasons, but I can't get enough of this lockdown life, particularly doing the podcast with you, mate.
I appreciate that. The people you talk about, what, no job, dying, that kind of thing. Yeah, they got a lot to be disappointed about, really.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. But I'm enjoying what I can. I'm positive. I'm just trying to be upbeat. Working in the industry, Shanaz, it's hard to get 3 days off in a week, let alone in a row. So I'm trying to utilize it. I know that the time, you know, the NRL's only what's the date today?
I think it's 16 days away, my friend.
16 days away. I was trying to find the calendar here on my iMac because I just don't know what day of the month it is. And so 16 days away from NRL, nearly just over 2 weeks. Are you getting excited?
I'm getting something. I don't know if excited is the word, but I'm getting something.
Warm, fuzzy feeling? Like, what are you getting?
Anticipation.
Anticipation. Mm. So have you got the binoculars out down at Woolaware, just checking on your boys, seeing them go through the motions?
Yeah, I do actually. And there's a bit of a procedure there, like at every other club where you, if you're not in the bubble, you pretty much are not supposed to be around. So I'm back to the old bushes, shall we say.
The bubble. I can't stop thinking of the Moops when everyone talks about the bubble.
Now, we should say this episode is dedicated to Jerry Stiller, and we will be doing a lovely piece on him later on in the episode, so stick around for that. We're not going to not do an episode and talk about the great Jerry Stiller, who unfortunately passed away last night our time. So we will get to that. Brooksy, let's start with the National Rugby League. We're still in the process of the jab or not jab, no jab, no play. We touched on that last week. We're not going to harp on it too much this week. We did see some people come out with very strong messages to the players who were refusing to do so, including my captain, Wade Graham. What did you think about what he said?
I thought what Wade said was great leadership in this time, talking about how it is a team sport. And they've got to do everything as a collective to get this season up and running. I thought he came at it at a strong angle as a leader of the players. He hit everything that he needs to. Yes, it's an individual's right to whether or not they can take the jab. But at the end of the day, mate, we need everyone on board. We need everyone playing the game in order for the league to hit certain targets that they need to throughout the season. And I thought how he articulated himself on the radio was very good. And he just shows that he's not only a leader within the Sharkies group, but also in rugby league circles. He's always been very impressive when he's been on Fox League, and I've seen Channel 9 get him quite a bit. I know we've been at games, and particularly when he was injured a couple of seasons ago, and he was always in demand when I was working those Sharkies games across both us and 9 and radio. It's amazing to think, you know, where he's come from and and how good a leader he is. I'm just a big fan, and that's coming from a Dragons fan that generally dislikes people in the blue, white, and black. But, mate, he's amazing. You must be proud to have someone like that at your club, representing your club at that sort of level.
Yeah, personally speaking, I am. There's quite a bunch of the current squad who are in that category, in my opinion, both younger guys and older guys. And Wado's definitely at the top of that heap. Can't believe Penrith let him go. I'm not sure what that was about. Brooksy, we didn't talk about this in the rundown, but some of the family members and friends of the anti-vaxxers on Instagram and social media are referring to themselves in, I don't know, in the categories of like Holocaust victims and victims of Chinese, what's the word I'm looking for? Tiananmen Square incidents from yesteryear. What's going on there?
Yeah, Schnaz, it's clearly the same. Like, the comparisons are just uncanny. Mate, I know that's closer to you than it is to me in terms of that, but you can clearly, the link between the two is dumbfounding, and I think it's very disrespectful. If it is your own personal right, don't try and compare it to other things that have happened in history.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same. It's not the same.
It also just like completely gets people off their way of thinking. If I was even halfway feeling sympathetic for them, which I'm not, well, it's a done deal now. You guys are morons. Sorry, go on, Brooksy.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that if they're more than welcome to go play individual sports. Like, I think that's the thing. And they should do that. Like, unfortunately, rugby league, there's so many people around that team that relying on them to fulfill their role within the team. Like, I just, and for that comparison to come out, I lost a lot of respect for the people trying to post that sort of stuff to put themselves in a position where, they're being forced to do something that they don't want to do. But, Schnaz, sorry, just while we're talking about it, I've just been perusing the internet here whilst we've been on, and there has been somewhat breaking news in the last hour on the Telegraph website.
Okay.
So I'm just going to read a few excerpts from this article. It appears Titans duo Bryce Cartwright and Brian Kelly will not be allowed to play this season as the Queensland Chief Health Officer stands firm on the no jab, no play policy. So Dr. Jeanette Young said she's provided an exemption for NRL players who refuse to get vaccinated to be allowed to play only if they get vaccinated for medical, if they can't get vaccinated for medical reasons. A philosophical reasoning was not a valid reason to reject the flu shot. So she said, I sent a letter to the NRL yesterday in which I did exempt them from medical contradictions, no different from the exemptions. Sorry, I had to reread that word a couple of times. I was like, is it contradiction or anyway, no different from the exemptions I provide for children who are attending childcare or people who visit aged care facilities. So they have those same exemptions. If they've got medical reasons for not being vaccinated, they're allowed to play. They're very clear. If they've had an anaphylactic reaction to a previous flu vaccine or to any component of the flu vaccine, then you do not need to be vaccinated. I provided that exemption.
Wow.
Philosophical reasons are not covered. So that's a stern decision there from the chief medical officer from Queensland. So no cut. Cartwright, Kelly, not looking good for 2020. Is that, what's your feelings of that? Like, we just sort of touched on the personal side of things from their angle, but Let's look at it from a teammate, coach, fan perspective. Like, what's that do to your club? Like, what happens there with Brian and Bryce? Like, are they coming back to the club? Can they come back and play for the Titans in 2021 if they don't play in 2020?
Well, they can, but it depends again on what happens next year. There might be the same ruling. You might need a jab next year as well to play.
Yeah.
I mean, March is going to come around pretty quick. We're in May now, shorter season. Who knows what the state of the world will be like then? But from what you're saying, he's going to need a new center. He's going to need a new back row or interchange player. And Bryce Cartwright takes up a lot of their salary cap.
Who's going to miss those six tackles a game? Like, that's the questions that Justin Holbrook's going to ask. Sorry.
I didn't want to go there, but yeah.
Yeah. But in reading further in the article too, Shnaz, so it works the other way too. So if someone in New South Wales has rejected that shot, they won't be able to play in Queensland. So if there's anyone from south of the border and they schedule some games up in Queensland, they won't be able to play.
So is there a chance the New South Wales government's going to do the same thing, or what's going on there?
Well, it's all state-driven, Shnaz. So, like, you know, this is Queensland, New South Wales. They can do different things depending on their circumstances. But I don't know. I think
because there's some Manly chaps that don't really want to get the jab either, for example, as well as whoever else.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that if it's all determined on where you're playing. If New South Wales don't bring that in, then those Manly players will be able to play in New South Wales. But if there's a game at Seabus or Suncorp, they won't be able to play. They'll have to sit that one out.
What if the grand final's at Suncorp?
Exactly. Well, no jab, no play.
No grand final.
Interesting DNP there for the player. But that would be funny, wouldn't it? If your team made the finals and there was a game in Queensland and they get the jab. It's interesting. And I know it's not 100% shows where they stand, and I'm sure, like, you want to do whatever you can to play at the pinnacle, but you'd be like, oh, so when the times are right, you're going to be getting the jab. So I don't know. Like, it's a tough one.
Well, I mean, Cartwright's saying goodbye to a lot of money this year.
Yeah. And look, I honestly, when Cartwright first came out, I liked what he provided for Penrith, and you saw him in the 20s and you saw him as a really good talent.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of saw him as like a Filete Mateo, John Sutton sort of edge back rower that, you know, could, you know, got some good ball playing skills. As Laurie Daly would say, he was good with the football.
Good with the football.
You need a player that's good with the football in your football team. But he went up to the Titans. I think it was part of Garth Brennan, taking that role and bringing some players from Penrith, like Liani Latu, Mitch Rain, and Bryce Cartwright. I think he did a bit of a exodus up to Penrith. And, yeah, he just hasn't performed. I don't think it's a big loss for the Titans. I think Brian Kelly was a good addition. Like, he's a solid centre.
He's solid.
He scored a few tries for him last year, but I think they're not missing much with those two guys. And it would be interesting to see if it was like Jai Arrow and AJ Brimson or one of those younger guys. But they get it. They're all in with the Titans. And, it's two good opportunities for some young Queenslanders to get a role with the team. Hey, I just wanted to segue in nicely here, Shnaz. Did you see some photos of the great Anthony Don over the last 24 to 48 hours getting his masters?
I read the headline. I didn't see any photos, but how good is that? That was my first reaction because I quite like him as a footballer. I think he's one of those guys that just all heart, give you everything they've got. He's a cult hero, but he's obviously got a brain too, which I love.
So Shnaz, he completed his second university degree.
Yeah,
masters in business to go with his PE teaching degree. And the photo of him with the hat, with the ISO beard. It's got no, there's no fluency there with the beard. It's all over the place. It's just the sign of the times. I think we've already posted the photo to the Twitter, but we'll put it on our MySpace, Facebook, and other social media accounts so you can have a look. But yeah, he's just, it's blue sky. It's just a great shot. And he's the sort of leader that, you know, Anthony Don was playing in for Burleigh Bears last year. The Don, with his double degree, he's going to get an opportunity with Brian Kelly.
I didn't understand him being relegated, to be honest, given what they were bringing up into first grade. I think he's a very solid first grader.
Yeah. He's their all-time leading try scorer.
Yeah. I thought it was very
third degree in try scoring. This guy, he's just accumulating masters all over the place. Congratulations to him. It's great to see players utilizing their time off the field to venture into different areas. And, you know, he can be a PE teacher. He can run a business. He can score tries. He makes great suppressor salami as well. The guy's amazing.
Brooksy, we saw also, speaking of interstate rugby league teams, the Melbourne Storm, who you and I both quietly respect, they were more or less kicked out of Albury or not allowed to play in Albury. What happened? Something happened.
No, so remember last week on the pod, Schnaz, we're like, how good's this? Tamworth's accepted the Warriors. Like the Tamworth Warriors, we've got the Albury Storm, they're all good. And then we get off air, and then Albury, the town of Albury, have called a town meeting, I don't know, in the gymnasium down on 2nd Street or wherever it was, just near the Ocean Master, not too sure. And they're like, we don't want the Storm playing on our fields.
Mm.
They had a vote. And it was voted against them because, you know what? Because the kids of Albury can't play on the fields. Why can Cameron Smith and his dirty ISO beard play on our fields? Why can Cameron Munster, Josh Adokar, who else is there? Dale Finucane, buddy Matt Johns' son.
Richard Swain.
Richard Swain, buddy, Marcus Bai can't even play in Albury anymore. Shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was disappointing. Albury showed their true colours. But it was ironically an AFL team, the Albury Tigers, that allowed them to train there.
That's nice.
Which is great cross-code relations.
Yeah.
During this time where clearly the NRL has dominated the AFL off the field in terms of getting their league up and running, it was great to see the Tigers get behind the Storm, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
And kick a few goals off the field.
And they're heading back to Melbourne though now, aren't they? Because they've been
back to Amy Park, the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, has okayed the Storm and other professional teams in the AFL to resume training.
Mm.
So yeah, Melbourne head back, and which is great. We should get familiar with their usual surroundings.
Now, Brooksy, where
what else has been happening in the news? Oh, sorry, Schnaz, talking over you. That's a bit hard on the FaceTime.
In the news, I can see you in the rugby league news.
Yeah. What's excited you?
I'm excited to see the draw. I'm a simple guy, Brooksy. I've got an inkling of what it's going to be. A few little hints here and there from people in the know. But
how good's the Canadian Boffins sliding a little teaser for us? Given, hey, we won't give you the full draw, but do you want to know who your team's playing twice? Our mate Michael Shamwow Shamus has got the five teams that you'll be playing twice.
Well,
this season.
Well, TBC, but they must have got it wrong with the Sharkies because they've picked Manly to play Manly twice. Well, there's 4 points gone. Come on.
Oh, you guys have a bit of a tough draw against Manly. What is it about the rivalry of it? Look, Manly have the better beaches too, Schnaz.
No, they don't. What are you talking about?
Can you add a bit of a game deep sea marlin fishing rod noise, like taking the bait, just a zzz, right there. Actually, I just did it.
You did. They don't have the better anything, actually. They've got a better history in a cultural
memory. Okay, what's the best beach down in the Shire?
I'm a Wanda guy. I like Wanda.
What, because of the dunes? Oh, we've got a good dune system there. People run up the dunes.
Is that what I said? No.
No, I'm just assuming because...
It's a nice area.
There's at least 9 beaches on the northern beaches that are better than Wanda.
No.
Do you want me to go through them?
No, because you don't know what you're talking about.
Bungin?
No.
Turramatta?
No.
Longreef?
Definitely not.
Curly, north and south?
No.
Freshy?
No.
Queensy?
No.
Manly Beach?
Definitely Shelley Beach? Not.
Collins Flat? There's 9. I just rattled, and that was just 9 random ones, and they all tick the box.
I'm going to say Shelley Beach in Cronulla is better than Shelley Beach in Manly.
Ooh. I can't wait to hear people write in, text in, you know, page. Schnaz has still got his pager from 1992. What's your page number again?
It's been so long, I've forgotten what it is.
I can't wait to hear, because we've got people that listen to the podcast from both sides of the bridge.
Pretty much our listenership is exclusive to the beaches.
The winner gets to play the eastern suburbs in the beach off next week.
What's your disgrace? What's your disgrace of a club? Who are they playing twice? Who have you got?
Your disgraceful club twice. The Sharkies at Cogra, maybe. It would have to be Cogra, wouldn't it?
Aren't they going to just play at 2 central grounds? Isn't that still happening? I don't know.
I don't know what's going on. It's going to be like Cluedo. It's like Dragons and the Sharkies with the candlestick at Leichhardt. It's going to be just some random shit in the draw. But this is what we've got. So yeah. Dragons fans... look away now. Sharks, Roosters, Eels, Tigers, Raiders. So we've got the grand finalists from last year. We've got the Eels. We've got ninth place West Tigers, which is okay. The perennial ninth places. Sorry, Tigers fans, I had to say. And the Sharkies.
All right.
So I think that's a fairly tough one. Sharkies.
My disgraceful club. Yeah.
Before.
Yeah.
Dragons. Anthony Don's and his 3 degrees with the Titans. You've got the Newcastle Knights, the North Queensland Cowboys,
Val,
and as mentioned, the Manly Seagulls. So tough dude. Michael Bublé's there for both clubs. I think it's going to be tough looking. Like the Roosters. How's the Roosters? This is a tough one. Bunnies, Dragons, Broncos, Raiders, Storms, Albury Storms.
Mm.
That'll be hostile if it's at Albury.
Get out of here, Storms.
Why are you playing on our field? I thought we voted 5-4 that he wouldn't be on the field.
Did you see? I think I saw it on your show, Brooks.
Go to Wodonga.
How far is Wodonga? It's close, right? Albury Wodonga. Like, what's the story there?
Yeah, it's like Foster Tongue Curry.
Right.
It's like there's a river, like the Murray River. The Great Murray divides both cities and states.
On your show, Brooksy, I'm pretty sure I saw a Zoom meeting of when they voted on it. Did you see that? It was like 9 characters from the Albury Council or something.
Oh, God. Aren't they characters too? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's just hilarious. I love it. Like Tamworth were like 9-0. I don't know. Yeah, just get them in. Someone give them a guitar. So yeah, I heard they're good on the guitars. Or, you know, bring a bit of music flair to the town.
Dale Finucane.
Well, no Warriors.
I know.
But yeah, I'm sure Dale's been up there for a golden guitar or two. But yeah, I don't know what I was talking about. They're Albury. Yeah, I don't know, mate. Like, seriously, there was Wodonga's. It's like a Foster Tongue Curry sort of situation.
Yeah,
bit like the Tweed River as well. Like,
okay,
like there's Tweed Heads, yeah, and Coolangatta.
All right, Brooksy. Well, there's a lot more.
How good's that? What's your favourite river in Australia, Schnaz?
not the Georges.
Little river band? Oh.
I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
You definitely beat us in the river stakes. We've just got lagoons on the northern beaches.
Yeah.
So 1-0 Shire. Well done. Early win against Manly.
You say this, but you live in the eastern suburbs now.
I know, but you know, home is where your heart is, or whatever that saying is.
How did you spend the morning, Brooksy?
Today?
Yeah.
Oh, I went for a walk around the eastern suburbs. I did a run up to, as I mentioned before, Watson's Bay yesterday. So the old quadriceps and hamstrings, bit tight.
I know the area well. It's a very nice area.
Yeah, it's great. Went up to the Gap and had a look, and went down to Watson's Bay and did the run along New South Head Road. It's gorgeous up there, looking back towards the city.
Sure is. Brooksy, there's a lot more NRL business to discuss, but I don't really care to do so.
Is there anything left? Is there anything we can talk about? Like, what else can we talk about NRL? Surely there's one more thing we can talk about.
How will the retirement of Alan Jones from radio affect rugby league?
Oh, wasn't that an interesting development this morning? What was your favourite Alan Jones NRL coaching season?
'89, maybe. Was it 89 he coached South? When did he coach South? I don't know.
No, he's Tigers, wasn't he?
Oh, Tigers.
Rugby league. Oh, yeah.
He was the Tigers, but he had a South connection. He was heavily involved with getting them back in. My favourite moment of Alan Jones' career, though, was him starting the Cruella Riots. But that's another story.
He coached the Manly Marlins in 1983,
right?
Rugby Union.
Right.
So what? 1 year stint. He then coached the Wallabies from 84 to 87.
Yes.
He then went to the Balmain Tigers from 91 to 93.
Ooh.
And then he came out of retirement, mind you, a 24-year retirement, to coach the Barbarians in 2017.
That's right, yeah.
Is he one of the greatest sporting coaches we've never seen?
No.
Because, yeah, I don't know, like, Balmain sort of was good in 89, 90, right?
Yeah, they didn't do too well under him, I don't think.
Alan Jones, I think he was, didn't he sign, like, Darren Clark, the sprinter? He's like, no, oh, he's going to be good on the wing, isn't he? Can't teach pace. It's 7:42 and I'm with Darren Clark.
All these years I've known you, I didn't know that your best impersonation.
No, it's
it's amazing.
It's a terrible impersonation. But God, just looking, he's had a few defamation cases.
Yeah, guys. I think we might wrap the Alan Jones section up here.
No, just the nine. But yeah, there's other cases like the London incident in 88, Cash for Comment affair, Cronulla riots, as you mentioned.
Yeah, he had a large part in that.
Kovco comments, military trial commentary, climate change commentary,
oh.
Jonestown, the book.
Now, Brooksy, it's his job to talk about things, so don't be so harsh on Alan Jones.
No, I'm just reading his Wikipedia page out. I'm not saying anything. But yeah, like he's an icon of Australian radio, I guess, particularly in Sydney.
I believe his ratings are phenomenal.
Yeah, and I guess he's still going to be on Sky News for those people that enjoy his comments.
Outdated thoughts. So,
yeah, or whatever you think. But, I just think, you know, his tenure at Balmain was probably a good and a bad thing for the Balmain Tigers. But, yeah, unfortunately didn't bring the trophy to Leichhardt during his time.
No.
I guess that is a good way to wrap up what's happening in the NRL.
Thank God. We're going to take a break and we'll be back after this short little space.
I feel a draft. Let's change tables.
Get out of here. We have a booth.
Frank, I'm cold.
Order a hot dish.
Why can't we sit over there?
That's not a booth.
So who says we have to sit in a booth?
I didn't take the subway all the way to New York to sit at a table like that.
All right, guys, it's Brooksy. Welcome back to the League Life Lockdown League Life Pod. Shaz, that was a nice little space there that we enjoyed.
Yes.
Everyone enjoyed?
Yes.
Yeah. Space. That was a good word. I loved it. Mate, what else I loved last night? There was so much viewing last night for everyone. There was a week with Warnie that premiered on all Fox Sports channels last night. We had Billions for the people with the Stan.
Yeah.
That's a really good show. Love it, Schnaz.
Yep.
That was good. Have you been paying attention for the people that don't like Foxtel and love their free-to-air channels?
Which seems to be a lot of people if you look at Twitter.
We also had.
Can I ask one question? Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
Was my girl Sarah Harris show last night?
No, I didn't get to watch it. There was too much on.
Okay.
I'm going to watch it today.
Move it on.
And obviously, there was The Last Tango.
Ooh. Yeah.
AKA The Last Dance, AKA Save the Last Dance.
Mm-hmm.
Episodes 7 and 8.
Yes, yes.
Quite possibly the best section of the documentary so far. How good was the opening to episode 7, Schnaz? And I guess journos would be familiar with this sort of behavior. You know, all the journos would have been in there going, okay, we've got Jerry Krause, we're just going to hammer him with questions, blah, 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 blah. Craig just goes straight for the jugular. Jerry's just like, I don't want any of this. This is ludicrous. I can't believe you've asked me that question. Walks off, and one of Craig's fellow journos go, way to go, Craig. Like, it was hilarious. I thought it was a great start. It was punchy. It was funny. It was just like you could tell, like, you know, that obviously Jerry, you know, there was a rift in the team, but yeah, like everyone would have had spent all this time with the presser, like coming up with their questions and what they wanted to write about, and bang.
It's amazing. Out. Amazing that 25 years later, however long it was, that we get to see that bit of footage now, just that little as an outtake, basically.
Just, and we're like, the funny thing is in the NRL, and not comparing it, but just showing you what we go through. We, you know, we've got like, we barely can hear the people in the presser. And all you can hear is the response.
Yeah.
So you're just hearing people talking. It's improving. We're putting boom mics in and stuff. But like the last few years, you just, all you can hear is, you got like one microphone angled towards a crowd and one at the player or the captain, the coach or the captain.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first episode was interesting, Schnaz. We got to see obviously the end of the first three-peat. We saw Michael Jordan's father murdered in the July of 1993.
Yeah.
His retirement, his move to baseball that next January. That was a very emotional start to the documentary, and something like, I was 11 at the time. I remember like those main things, like not really hearing too much in between, like Bulls three-peat, Jordan's dad dies, Jordan retires, Jordan goes to baseball. Like that sort of, you know, you sort of hear that, you hear the main stories, but God, it really filled in the blanks really nicely last night for people that weren't really across what had happened.
Yeah,
what did you think of it?
It sure did. I'm in that same boat where, as I've said every week, I'm a novice at this sport and industry, but I'm absolutely loving it. I did know some of those things, as you said, but can I ask you one question, Brooksy? The very, you know, unfortunate, distasteful murder of his dad, was that related to anything as far as like his identity being Michael Jordan's dad, or was it just a random kind of thing?
Well, they reckon it was random. And how bad was like the media like linking it to his gambling and like just the other side to Jordan off the court? Like,
yeah, I wasn't sure what the outcome was of that.
Yeah.
It did sound random.
No, it was not. Yeah, it was random. And that's what they were saying. They said, you know, it could have been anyone.
Yep.
Could have been anyone at that time. But yeah, like you Sports Illustrated, like quickly we'll touch on the baseball here because of the Sports Illustrated article. Like just coming out and saying he's like sort of a disgrace to baseball. Like,
yeah, the short story, if you are not going to watch it, if you are going to watch it, don't listen to the next 10 minutes of the show. But Michael Jordan, perhaps the best ever in his sport, is feeling tired. He's feeling disinterested to a degree, and he chooses to take up one of his favorite sports as a kid, which he played up until the age of 17, and that was baseball. And he aligned himself with the Chicago team and
the
White Sox, did all the right things and was actually looking pretty good. He had some unhappy moments for sure, but the press were all over him and it was like they were waiting for him to fall. And that's obviously not something uncommon with the whole world of media and social media, just people waiting to jump on you for having a go, basically.
That's where what I took from it too, just the from what you saw of the media's angle of him going to baseball, like it was like they weren't even giving him credit to succeed in another sport. Mm. They were actually waiting for him to fail.
Yeah.
Like they were preempting it.
Yeah.
Like we saw Terry Francona on, which was amazing. Like I haven't seen Jordan rides a bus. I was texting a mate who loves baseball, Jeremy Markham.
You haven't watched that?
He said, I didn't know until I watched Jordan Rides a Bus. And I was like, oh, shit, I haven't even watched that
documentary. Come on.
So I'm going to go watch it. But it was good, like, little teaser to to that. I was like, Francona was his manager.
Mm.
And then him saying all this stuff about how he'd hit over 250 ribbies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if he spent more, he was dedicated, you know, he was hit on the breaking ball machine, just kept constantly working on his swing, on his hitting. He wanted to succeed. He had that drive in baseball just as much as he had in basketball. And if he spent more time on it, he was a major league prospect. Like, absolutely. That's crazy. And, like, I didn't really, like, you know, because I hadn't really looked into too much of his baseball career. And to get that sort of kudos from Terry Francona, you know, coach of the manager of the Red Sox, manager of the Indians, who have had somewhat success. Whew.
And
disappointing to see that he was portrayed differently in the media.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he was asked in current times, was he offended by the Sports Illustrated coverage, and he said, absolutely I was.
And he banned them. Banned them for quite some time.
And he was quite fair about it because he said they didn't actually come and talk to me. They just wrote an opinion piece. If they'd talked to him, he said his piece, then they wrote about it, he wouldn't have a problem with it. What we also saw was his determination and drive coming through in spades, and his relationship with his father was such an influence on him that his father wanted him to play baseball at some point.
And that was their last conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like, talking about, you know, whether he should go and play baseball. He was thinking about retiring before his father passed away, and that was the thing. Whether, like, people perceived it as being, oh, he just wants to get away from basketball, or there was the conspiracy theory that the NBA suspended him for 18 months and he had to stay away.
Mm.
And David Stern basically said there was no suspension.
No.
Yeah, there were some things that he did off the court that we didn't necessarily like, but he wasn't suspended.
No.
So we couldn't suspend him on that.
We saw two things, Brooksy, in that period, I guess. The determination. So when he had some unhappy lower-grade games, for want of a better word, he would then go straight back to the batting practice. They talked about how much he practiced baseball on his own time. And we also saw, so that's the determination side. We also saw the fact that his dad was such an influence on him. And that got you and I talking before we went on air about, you know, role models in life and that kind of thing. And and if you pick the right one, if you have the right one, if you're fortunate enough to have the right one, it doesn't have to be father-son, obviously, because not everyone has that. But just that I guess, older figure in your life, how important it can be if it goes right and how important it can be if it goes wrong. So I love that aspect of it, and I really love the fact that he's just such a determined SOB. I love that, and that creeps into the second episode as well, where, and the theme throughout the whole series is that he's so tough on everyone in his competitive life. So his teammates, yeah. his coaches, definitely his opposition. We saw yeah. a couple of guys make it personal with him on the court, something that, you know, to anyone else probably wouldn't have been that personal, but he was just like, what? Oh, okay. It's on.
Even the Le Bradford Smith one, Shaz, exactly. I don't think was that bad. He just no. like Le Bradford Smith. Look, I've got a couple of his basketball cards, Shaz. They're not in a protective case. Let's just put it that way. Him dropping 30 odd points on MJ and then going great game, Mike, just started the kettle boiling. And then sure, I just love the stories, like how that one, like of all teams, like the Bulls were playing the Bullets the next game. It was a home and away. It was back-to-back games.
Yeah, he should have waited.
Le Bradford could have just like let it go. And then I think he scored 36 points in the first half of the return game.
Yeah, he scored.
Ended up with 43 or something.
He scored as much in half the time.
That's so good. I didn't know that story. And like, I try and keep up with a lot of the Jordan stuff, but
yeah.
that was insane. It was so good. And then just seeing like those, like seeing the BJ Armstrong story as well, which was the Charlotte in the second round of yep. this final series, and BJ having that awesome game too. And, you know, celebrating on the court, and he just, you know, Jordan couldn't really handle that. You know, you can't.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
His competitiveness.
It's so strong. And I understand it's unique probably to him. Like he seems like the most competitive person in the history of the world. Whether I'm right or wrong, obviously I'm probably wrong. But to have that drive and have that guy come back into your team. So they talked about his return yeah. to the Bulls. And they interviewed the players. And I think they were having a pretty average season. And then he came back and they were like, you know what? We could actually do something here because he's just the best. And he's so competitive. Yeah. And he talked about how – so Jordan talked about how there were new guys, younger guys, including Luke Longley, on the team, and they'd come into this championship type team, but Jordan was like, no, I don't think so. You're the new guys. We built this. You got to earn my respect. And the way that you earn his respect is that it appears that he trash talks you for like a year and you put up with it. And then you've got his respect.
Yeah. I love there was this wasn't verbatim, but Will Perdue, who was one of his centers, in that first three-peat, yep. he actually was in the trade for Dennis Rodman. So he went to the Spurs in return for Rodman.
Yeah.
There was a line like where he was like, yeah, he's an arsehole, he's a jerk, but he was one hell of a teammate. And that's like, that's him to a T. And it's just like, and it goes back to what MJ was saying before The Last Dance came out. And he was sort of like, look, I think it's pretty raw. Like these documentary series is pretty raw, and I'm going to come across like an arsehole.
Mm.
And I think that's what people have got to expect. And I think, you know, he touched on it earlier.
He doesn't, right?
I think, yeah. Like again, like we all know this sort of side, like a lot of this side of Jordan and the way he behaved on the court. I just think it builds his legend up even more to some of these stories and just the success that he brings,
it's got to be circumstantial, Brooksy, because if you,
yeah.
like we've all, you know, worked with people, you and I have worked with probably the same people for a time who, you know, you didn't get along with, or they were a jerk or whatever. They weren't on board the way everyone else was going, sort of thing. You know, that's in a workplace and we're earning like, you know, $30 an hour, whatever it was. We're not getting a lot out of it except for, you know, experience and a paycheck. If you put yourself in the Chicago Bulls and you're on so much money, you've got the fame, you've got the fancy cars, you've got the experiences of winning these championships, history-making championships, I think you're going to put up with the fact that one of the greatest, if not the greatest player of all time, is ribbing you for a whole session. I think you're going to put up with it, you know?
And definitely for those guys coming in that second three-peat, like the success was already there. You know, that they were going to the Bulls on the proviso. That, you know, there was, well, initially it was Scotty and Tony with rookie season. Wasn't that great, getting a bit of insight? But there's people complaining about the timeline going back and forth, and I can't keep up with it. I don't know where I'm at. I don't know if it's 93 or 83 or 97. Like, bunch of idiots.
Yeah, because he looks the same throughout his whole career, right?
Yeah, and the whole, like, slow timeline move, whether it's back or forth, really confuses me as well. But anyway, I digress on that.
Yeah.
But it was great going back and seeing that season without Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Tony Kukoc's rookie year, that iconic Kukoc for the win, like that. I remember, like, back in the day, Schnaz, and it's like you probably get the same way when you wake up of a morning with songs.
Yeah.
Like, they're in your head and you're sort of just humming a beat or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you'd be humming, like, a riff or something that you've heard, or one of Bruce's awesome riffs. But I, back in the day, used to do commentary. It was in my head. And I'd wake up, like, there was Kukoc for the win. There was some Sean, like, Peyton to the Rain Man. Like, I used to have those Kevin Calabro calls, like, oh, my goodness, he punched that ticket and went on his way. Like, had all these, like, sort of things from watching NBA Jam and NBA Jam Session and Super Slams of the NBA and all those sort of NBA action shows. And it was just, like, reliving that series against the Knicks was so good. That Pippen just, oh. That dunk on Ewing. No wonder he's not watching the documentary. He's just like, he's in like every episode getting dunked on by MJ or Scotty or losing. They lost in the playoffs 5 times to the Bulls. And then that was the only one that they beat him, and it was without Jordan. They ended up losing to the Rockets that year in the finals without MJ. But that series had a massive fight in it with JoJo English, who was in the Bulls roster. But yeah, it was good to see and give a bit of context as how the team grew without MJ in that season. Like, the triangle offense really suited Pippen being the leader and being a distributor. And you saw that sequence where it bounced around and finished with a Bill Winnington dunk. It was awesome.
And what about Pippen sitting out that part of the end game because he got the poos because the other fellow was going to take the shot? That was unbelievable.
And then he doubled down and went, I'd do it all again.
Yeah, so...
If I had my time over it...
Scottie Pippen, I don't know a lot about him before watching this. I definitely recognise him. I know his work, but I never studied the guy. And he's a pretty complex guy when you listen to him talk, because he's so chilled. And his emotions are very behind a wall, but what he says is very articulate. And so I thought he was going to say, you know, I've learnt from this, which I think he sort of did. But then, he just went, oh, I'd do it again. I was like, whoa. And
you saw the vision of, you saw the vision of Bill Cartwright, like, talking to him. And then afterwards you hear he got emotional and said, we need you, Scotty.
Yeah.
Like that, and it's sort of like what Jordan, and what I got from that is, like, Jordan instilled this sort of culture in that Bulls locker room. We saw the cocaine cowboys or whatever it was when he first got to the Bulls. We saw the Swarm, the futsal team or whoever it was out.
The Swarm,
packing the stadium.
Yeah.
And then you've got this moment where they're vying for a spot in the NBA finals without MJ, and their star wasn't going into the game because he wasn't getting the final shot. And it was just like, damn, like that team was good, but I don't know if it should have got that far. Like, Tony's a talent. Scotty was playing out of his skin, but the leader of the team was refusing to go into the game because he wasn't going to shoot that last shot. Who knows if they closed out Tony, he could have been the next in line for that next shot.
Yeah.
So think of it like this, Schnaz. Like, the defense could have sent two people to Tony Kukoc knowing that Scotty wasn't in.
Yeah. The fact he made the shot too is just incredible.
Like when Jordan was dribbling down court against Phoenix, the play wasn't necessarily to get the ball to John Paxton out on the wing. It eventually went there. Barkley overplayed Scotty. The ball went into Scotty. He used the 2-on-1 to get it to Horace. Horace kicks it back out. Like, that was just a fluent play. That could have happened on the play too, and that's where I don't agree with Scotty. He should have still been out there because he could have demanded a double team. He could have done something off the ball that could have created a better opportunity than a fadeaway Tony Kukoc too. And great that it went in, and it's an iconic shot, but... Mate, that I thought it was terrible form. I think, and basketball is the sort of thing where if you can be on the court and create a diversion, particularly being the star, and the Knicks would have put their best defender on Scotty if he was in the game. But as Ewing said, he was like, Scotty's not coming back in the game.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Like, that was bizarre.
That was big language, and that's like, you know, who knows? If he's on the court and they still get the win, how does the series play out? It's a sliding doors moment there. He could have won it. He could have potentially gone to play for a title without MJ. Like, that's crazy. But anyway, like, that's history, revisionist history, and looking back at those sort of moments. But sorry, I just got all nerdy basketball there for about 5 minutes.
We saw.
That's why I love it. It's so good.
I know. I love it too. I keep saying I'm a novice, but you don't have to like basketball to watch this. We can't emphasize that enough. We saw Jordan come back, and there was a pivotal game which happened to be on Father's Day.
And that was the NBA Finals, Game 6 against my Sonics.
Against your Sonics, yeah. I finally got to see your Sonics in action. And Father's Day, his father had passed away. I believe it was the first Father's Day since his death. And, you know, it felt like the whole world was kind of watching how he was going to react, and he was pretty emotional before, during, and after. And there's a final scene of the show, of the episode, and he's in the dressing room on the ground, sobbing and crying. And it's everything. It's the win. It's his father not being there. It is vision that you would be very hard pressed to find in any sport around the world.
Yeah. No, both episodes had some great finishes, and we saw that in the last step of last yesterday's shows. Him on the ground, a lot of people were saying they hadn't heard that; they've only seen the vision, and just that sobbing, and the guy like awkwardly with the towel,
which was beautiful.
Because it just
it was shocking. I was shocked. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I mean, I understood it. But I couldn't believe A, that I was seeing it, and B, this is Michael Jordan, and he's an emotional guy, but he's not emotional like that. Like, we don't see those sort of emotions. We see anger, we see determination, we see skill, we see family, but we don't see that kind of vulnerability. And for him to have that included as well, I think is a big call. As well. Like good on him.
And that's the great thing about what they're doing. They're just showing everything. Like, it's just, we haven't had, like, in-depth sort of, like, the whole time we're behind the scenes, we're seeing footage that we haven't seen before. There is a lot of it is stuff we've seen, but that sort of stuff's just adding to the experience of what it is like as Michael Jordan. And that... it's just unbelievable. He had probably his worst of the six finals against the Sonics, and a lot of it stemmed from coming back, his first season, full season back. Yeah. His father, he discounts Gary Payton, but GP, the glove, he's just he's just something else. He was Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Just a real pest, like not only with his hands, but verbally, he's someone that could go at it with Mike, in the trash talk stakes. Like, and I think I mentioned it on the last podcast when MJ won the MVP of the All-Star game. You see Peyton in the background, and he's holding court, and he's just talking to all the other All-Stars whilst MJ is getting the trophy, and he's got everyone in stitches, like just laughing. He was just that, and you got that vibe. I don't know. Did you get that vibe from him in his interviews? Like, he's just like swearing and just like a real pest. Like even just pestering, and Jordan's like laughing, watching the iPad, and being like, the glove. I had no issues with the glove, But yeah, there was other things obviously that was playing its part. They were up 3-0 in the series. They dropped a couple of the last two games in Seattle.
Yeah.
So there would have been a bit of stress like coming back. We saw in the Phoenix series where they were up and they lost game 5 and Barkley was like, "No, we're going back to Phoenix, you know, take everything down off your windows." You know, there is a bit of pressure. We saw it with the Warriors recently against the Cavs, up 3-1. Draymond Green gets suspended and the Cavs come back and win the series in 7. Like, you want to just sign off on those series and it would have been some added pressure there after being 3-0 up. Like, no one's ever come back from 3-0 down. And for the Sonics to win 2 games and some of them, one of the games was quite 21 points.
Yeah.
He was definitely struggling.
Now, Brooksy, there's 2 episodes left. Is that right?
Yeah, there is.
How are you going to deal with the series being over?
Well, it's good that it's on Netflix. I might watch it all again when it's done. But it's going to be good. Like, it'll be the 2 Utah seasons. So they play Utah in back-to-back finals. 96-97 after the Sonics final series. And then, obviously, the last season, the last final series.
Yep.
It's going to be good. We're going to get a bit of insight into Karl Malone, John Stockton, the Utah team. Jerry Sloan hopefully makes an appearance. He was a Bulls legend as a player and a coach as well before going to Utah. So, yeah, it's going to be a great finale. I can't wait for it. Like the last two, I think the big takeaway for me, Schnaz, and what I really enjoyed about these last two was the battle between whether you can be the nice guy and succeed.
Mm.
And did you get that feeling like throughout that episode 7 and that finish where he just like delivered that emotional line where it's like, this is, I wanted them to, you know,
yeah.
I didn't have these exceeding expectations of them. I just wanted to, you know, meet my expectations and just,
oh, I mean, I understand.
He was so driven and
I understood.
What do you think?
I think that he was being unrealistic given how determined and competitive and talented he is. Like, no one could live up to that. But I love the fact that he wanted them to at least try and be as good and try and be as competitive.
Yeah.
And I think it's important. Do I think nice guys can get the job done? They absolutely can. It depends on the environment and it depends on the job that you're talking about. But, I mean, you know, I think about the workplace, so say not in the basketball workplace, but just say an office environment or a workplace where there's a team leader, a boss. You know, you can't be a nice guy, but I think if you're an idiot or if you're problematic in the way you deal with people, I don't think you're going to – like you might succeed – but you will have a very different team and a big amount of turnover. Whereas I think you can be a nice guy and still have strong morals, strong ethics, strong principles, and run a tight ship.
Yeah.
So that's where I sort of lean towards. And as far as, I mean, you look at coaching, especially in something we love like the NRL, can you be a nice guy? Like, you know, John Morris, is he too nice? Well, he's a nice guy, but, you know, he had a pretty good debut season as a coach. And as far as a player goes and that kind of thing, I think you got to have a sporting player. I think you do need to have that edge to you. I do think that a Michael Jordan and Andrew Johns, insert, you know, Wayne Gretzky, insert all these greats that you want to insert. You can be nice, absolutely, but you got to have that edge to you.
It seems like you see with those championship teams, like even you see Kobe. Kobe was like that. Kobe was always wanting the best out of his team. He pretty much, you know, emulated his game on MJ. You know, we saw that last week. You see Belichick and Brady, like they're always, you see, like that Atlanta Super Bowl, Brady just up and down the sideline, just giving it. A lot of people would have been 25 points down, holding up the white flag. But he was like, nah, opportunity, opportunity.
Yep.
They're going to do this. We're going to give it to them. They're going to do that. We're going to give it to them.
It doesn't.
Like they didn't stop. They didn't like the against the Seahawks. Like, you know, yeah, that was more Pete Carroll. But
yeah,
like, you know, they kept playing. They keep putting themselves in a position to win, to succeed. The competitive juices keep flowing. Yeah. And that's where in competition, Schnaz, and this is something that I got out of it, I was like, yeah, you have to stand on some people's throats to succeed. You can do it in a respectful way.
Yep, absolutely.
But you can't look back and be apologized for wanting to succeed sometimes. And I having come from an HR background and stuff, I sort of like to, you know, do the right thing by people. You know, I like communication's key, like honesty's key in the workplace, and, you know, like being able to, that's what I see as success in the workplace.
Yeah.
But then you see like what Jordan does and it sort of, it challenges some of those, I guess, ideas.
The stakes are a lot bigger though, Brooksy. I think that's where it does become circumstantial, because if I was working 20 bucks an hour somewhere and someone rode me like that, I'd probably be like, yeah, I'll go down the road and work for 20 bucks an hour. You know what
I
mean?
Of course. That's, yeah.
But you're correct. And I think about the music industry and I think about how seriously I take music, how seriously I take my music that I create. And if you do it half-assed, if you do it a bit wishy-washy, you're never going to reach the potential that you are able to reach, but you're also just not going to be taken that seriously. And I know when I go see a band or an act or whatever, if they're giving me everything they got and they're not my thing or they're not that good yet or whatever, I will still walk away going, you know what? They're trying. They've got something going on, and in a year or two, got they might potential. Be. Yeah. But if I go see a band and they're mucking around, they're trying to impress their mates, and like, which is fine, of course. But at this stage in my life, it's like, well, I've always been that way, but it's just like, what am I doing here? Am I wasting my time here? I could go watch another band. I could go play some music on my own. And I know when I have band practice, for example, with my band, and my band rotates a little bit as far as members go, they kind of know that we're on the watch and we're on the clock, and you know, I'm not really mucking around here. I don't really like practicing music. I like playing music. So the fact that I'm here with you guys and we're practicing my songs, you better give me everything you got. Otherwise, you know, it's, and I think about music and sport, and don't get me wrong, music and art, they're not competitive in the sense of a sporting achievement. Like, I'm not saying that I strive to be a bigger artist than, you know, Josh Pike or insert some other Sydney singer-songwriter. I don't look at it that way at all. But I want those guys. I want Ben Lee to respect what I do. You know, I know that he doesn't give a rat's that I sell 10 records and he sells 10,000. Like, he doesn't care about that. And I don't care about that in the sense that I really love what he does and he's really respectful to me about my music. And you know what I mean? Like, but there is that competitive drive. It's not about who's bigger or who's better, but there's a drive that you want to have the respect. And it's all about respect. Same in the workplace where you and I work at Fox. You want that respect.
Yep.
And you have to earn it though. And there's a lot behind what Jordan does that makes sense to me. I personally don't have it in me to act that way, as in every day on purpose act that way, but it worked, man. He made others better around him by driving them in that way that he did.
And the titles,
yes,
6-0.
Yeah.
6-0. And you saw with BJ Armstrong when he was going against Michael, everyone was like, whoa, where do you think he got that mentality from? Why he wanted to succeed against the Bulls? Because he just got out of that environment a couple of seasons prior. And he stood up and he played well. And they were just like, he got the Hornets a win in Chicago because he probably watched MJ and just go, I can do this. I can go up against him.
Yeah.
Like, giving him confidence. It was great to see, even though he was doing it for another club. It was a great two episodes, and looking forward to the last two next week.
I bet you are, Brooksy.
I had a nice steak and wine, and
I was wondering what you made up. So steak
sirloin,
and wine.
Okay. Some broccoli. I had a little like garlic and red wine, little sauce for the steak. It was beautiful. I don't know. What should I do next week, Schnaz?
It's good. You got to have some entrees. You're going to have dessert. I would suggest having a whiskey afterwards in dedication to the great man.
Definitely.
Brooksy, we're going to go take some space now and come back and talk about someone very important in our lives. So stick around. We'll be back very shortly after this space.
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way. What happened to the doll? It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
So, Brooksy, we had some sad news come through last night for those people who are listening fresh today, and that is that the very great actor, entertainer, comedian Jerry Stiller passed away, age 92. His son,
great innings.
His son Ben tweeted, I think around 6 or 7 o'clock our time last night, saying that sad news and he died of natural causes. And for those people who don't know Jerry Stiller, he was his best claim to fame in a long career of work was as Frank Costanza on the show Seinfeld, which Brooksy and I absolutely adore. And it's fair to say that, even though he wasn't one of the main four characters, he's definitely a star of the show and someone that people just absolutely love.
Yeah, he was one of those side characters in Seinfeld that really made the show. Like, yeah, it's good. You have the four mainstays, but George's dad, Frank Costanza, like some of the great lines of the show, some of the great... like iconic things out of the show have come from him. Festivus,
Serenity Now.
Like, there's a few things that just will live forever. And you know, Festivus has become part of the hipster calendar every year, which is great. Everyone's getting metal poles and putting them up in there. It's so hipsterish, isn't it? It's like, hey, you know what, man? We should just go get one of those metal poles and do Festivus. Like the trees, we don't come down the trees, like.
This is like
get a metal pole.
This is 25 years after the fact.
Yeah, there's like, you know, there's those Christmas stores like in random spots like Alexandria. There's like a Festivus store right in the middle of Newtown. where you get your metal poles. But yeah, airing of grievances, isn't that like a great part of Festivus? But
yeah,
Chaz, what were some of your favourite Frank Costanza moments?
Well, two episodes come to mind. They're slightly off kilter from probably everyone else's favorites, and that is two episodes he actually starred in, and they both involved his time in Korea, I believe. The first one is when he hooks up with his old Korean girlfriend, and that's the Stop Short episode. Yeah. I really love that. And he thinks it's all going to be, you know, they're back in the romance and she's a lovely girl and it's been so long and they're back together because he and Estella were separated at that point. And he stops short. That's his move. But the girlfriend didn't like it. That's an amazing episode. And the other one I love, which was just so out there, is when Frank returns to cooking. So Kramer is hosting a Jewish singles night for Jewish singles, and he can't quite cover the cooking aspect. And it's been revealed that George's dad, Frank, used to be a cook in the war and a really great cook, and he took it very seriously, and they showed flashbacks and that kind of thing. And that's a fantastic episode. Really, they're my two favorites.
Remember they play that music from one of those war movies? Yeah. It's like a death scene.
Yeah.
And he's just looking around at everyone with the food poisoning. It's so good. Hey, but remember, Schnaz, I thought I'd throw this one out. He wasn't actually the initial Frank Costanza.
No, he wasn't.
So there was an episode, The Handicap Spot, the remember? Wheelchair, yeah. And
he was
Frank
a pretty
Costanza.
He was a pretty cool guy, that guy.
John Randolph
featured
in one episode and then they did the change. I'd love to hear from Larry or Jerry as to the reason why they changed, because Hey, it was a massive call, and it definitely paid dividends. I can't. I remember John Randolph.
He was a lot older.
He couldn't have done all that stuff.
No.
Yeah, he couldn't have.
He was a lot older. If he wasn't a lot older, he looked a lot older than Jerry Stiller. And he was good in that episode. He was good. And there were some traits.
He played it a bit straight, wasn't he?
He was a lot straighter, but there were the traits like the slap of the head, the palm slap on the head kind of thing.
That's right.
And he was good, but there's no way you could even compare it to Jerry Stiller. And obviously, there is a story. I don't know it off the top of my head to say it now on the podcast, but there's a story, there's a clip of how they cast Jerry. And I think they originally wanted Jerry, or he wasn't available, then he became available. Yeah. It was something like that.
Yeah.
What's some of your favorites, Brooksy?
I love, like, I think it's the same episode. It seems like it is. I don't think it is, actually. He's just running his battle with George Steinbrenner, where he's on the couch at home and Steinbrenner's come over.
It's when George is dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is the same episode because, okay, I'll start with the first thing. The answering machine message on Jerry's answering machine was amazing. It's like, hi, Jerry, it's Frank Costanza. I think I'm with Steinbrenner. George is dead. Call me back. Or something like that.
Which I have I've used on your voicemail a few times.
And I've done it on yours as well. Like, hey, Schnaz, it's Brooksy. George is dead. Call me back. It's just like, it's such a good one, like, just to throw in.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was amazing. Like, just Jerry walking over and playing it.
Yeah.
And then him later in the episode, I think it is, where Steinbrenner's over at the Costanzas. He's on the couch and he's like, talking, and Frank just comes out with the whole, why did you trade Jay Buhner? You had 50 ribbies. Oh, he's got a rocket for an arm. I don't know what the hell you're doing.
Oh, so good.
And he does I notice when you watch him, he does the look away really well. It's like he delivers his line, but like he's just as if he's like saying something normally. He's so crazy that he's just looking away, like he's distracted by something else or just, you know, I thought the way he delivered those big lines was amazing. I love that. I remember when he's with the Rosses and he's at the table.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
You got the hen, the chicken and the rooster.
Yeah, that's a very, very good line, that one.
And he's like, who's having sex with the hen?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, the rooster is as well. And he's like, oh, that's perverse.
That's the Marble Rye episode, one of the greats. Brooksy's lost
it. The Marble Rye and there's the dancing, like in the Bro and the Man's Ear one,
yeah.
When Estelle walks in.
I mean, he became such a integral part of that show. As did all sets of, like, both sets of parents, George's and Jerry's. Like, Jerry's, you can't underestimate their effect as well. But Frank really does steal the show many, many times. And, he, you know, he did a lot of work. This was probably, what, his second last gig. He did Kings of Queens after it. But, you know,
you know how I feel about that.
No, we all feel.
Whatever his name is.
We all feel the same about Kings of Queens. But what I'm saying is he had that long career before Seinfeld of things that we didn't probably see. I mean, he's in a lot of films. You see cameos of him. He was married to his
Maury wife. Ballstein. Ballstein. Balls Models in Zoolander.
Zoolander,
it's a casserole. It's a casserole, Sheila. It'll keep. Remember, he's on the...
Yeah.
He's on the call during the last scene. Yeah,
so you got the Stillers, Ben and Jerry together. He was married to his wife for, I think it was 60-plus years. She was a really, really respected entertainer and comedian, actress. And I don't know if you remember, but I think it was after Seinfeld. It was definitely after Seinfeld finished, but there was a online, basically short, you know, show. And it was the two of them. Were they in bed reading the paper or something? I have a vague memory of it. And it was very, very funny stuff. And they were inseparable for 60 years, and she passed away, I think, 5 years ago or so. Don't quote me on that. But
Yeah, 2015.
Real family man, very much loved by the cast. I mean, we saw, I don't know if you saw it, Brooksy, but it was earlier, no, it was late last week that Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Jason Alexander did like a Zoom Instagram catch-up thing for an hour, just spitballing about two episodes, but then just in general, it was phenomenal. And they talked about Jerry a little bit, and they talked about Elaine's dad, who was that was remarkable. But he was very well.
What was that? We had a funny guy, and damn, it blew his brains out. So you know the story about that actor? Like, supposedly he was nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were sort of like, keeping a distance from him the whole episode.
Yes, yeah, so that was revealed in that interview. It was remarkable. Yeah. If you're a Seinfeld fan and you haven't seen it, just Google it. It happened last week between George and Julia, so to speak. And the revelation about Elaine's dad, the character, in the one episode is remarkable.
Yeah. There's so much just like talking about him. I was thinking about, remember when he's got the toothpick and he's like, I think George was going to get the job as a bra salesman. He's like,
remarkable.
And he's got the toothpick. He's like, you know about the cup sizes?
I know about the cup sizes.
There's B, there's C, and D. That's the biggest.
Yeah,
and then when like that running battle with the Seinfelds, like Morty and Helen,
there was be all like, over those shuffleboards.
We were going to lock, stock, and barrel. Yeah.
So I mean, in the spaces we've had in this episode, Brooksy, our audience who may not, for whatever reason, have heard these lines, have been hearing these lines, so they're catching up now with what we're talking about, and that we're going to run a few after this, but he was just integral, and it's sad news. I mean, he had a good long life, which is fantastic, but it's always sad just someone passing away that you admire and that you love, and he gave us so much joy and entertainment, and even to this day, like obviously you and I love that show, and he, as we've said, he's integral as pretty much anyone on the show.
Yeah, Frank Costanza, he'll just live on forever.
Absolutely.
Such an amazing character, one of the best dad characters in any TV show.
Yep.
Mate, it's a sad day, but, you know, his career has been absolutely amazing.
Schnauzer. Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Brooksy. We're going to go out on that high note, and we'll be back very soon, I would imagine, for some
next more week. We'll be within 2 weeks of liftoff of Project Apollo, Operation Apollo. we'll get Tom Hanks, Gary Sinise. I don't know who else is in the Apollo movies, but we've got it. Oh, maybe that's Forrest Gump. Was Gary Sinise in both Apollo 13 and Forrest Gump?
Good character.
It's definitely Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah. Are they going to run through a banner of Wayne Pierce or something? Like, how are we going to kick this off?
Oh, I reckon,
Or should Wayne Pierce run out first, maybe?
Do we do some sort of NASA-esque, like, sort of thing to start the season where, you know, the players, like, walk down, like, Cape Canaveral style, like, you know, do a little wave before kickoff? I don't know. See, I'm not one of those NASA nerds, but I think it's Cape Canaveral.
I'm not one of those nerds, but I know a bit about it. And no, we're not going to do that. But I think that we need to maybe a Valandy's kind of banner they run through or something. I see a banner in this circumstance.
Do you reckon they do a bit of a compilation of the best banners? You've got the Collingwood one that fell apart before the grand final they lost. You've got the
Long Beach.
You've got the Peter Sterling in Long Beach, California. wasn't there a Sharkies one where it was like, I remember.
I think so. Like, yeah. Was it John Morris?
I don't know. It was
John
one
Morris 300, yeah. Maybe? Someone, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those ones. I don't know. It was like a sort of like, or was it Gal? Like, it was sort of just
I remember it happened. I remember it happened. And ever since, the Sharkies have done it with this. Oh, my mic's gone. With the split in the middle, and it's you just touch it and it breaks, which is genius.
Yeah. Look, I think Luke Lewis had one of those. I was there going, that's pre-ripped. Come on.
You got it. You got it.
You can't pre-rip them. You got to rip them at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. We're getting closer, though. We're getting closer.
I know. Liftoff is soon. I can't wait. Sharky's Dragons likely first round back, I reckon.
Why do you say that?
Oh, it'd have to be, wouldn't it?
Well, if they're going to play them twice, maybe.
Yeah, get your boy, get the Dragons an early win. And, well, if it is, Schnaz, I think we mentioned this last week when we were talking about the draw. Like, one of us is going to be 0-3.
Yeah.
Owen.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Probably you guys.
Good chance. Anyway, mate, it's been great. Been a long one.
Yeah.
Been a lengthy one.
I'm 55 now.
Yeah, well done. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
You'll be able to access your super shortly. So, yeah, but thanks for that, Schnaz. You usually do the sign-off. Sorry.
No, you go for it. You do it.
I'm stealing your babies now.
That's a Seinfeld reference for you guys. Brooksy, we will see you later. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We're on social media. I don't know what our handle
is. We are,
is,
but... aren't we? At League Life NRL.
There you go.
You can get us on MySpace, Twitter, Facebook. What was the other one that you... Instagrams. Schnaz's TikTok. Schnaz...
Yeah.
Schnaz 65 or 69. I don't know which number it is. But, yeah, some good dance moves on that.
Yeah.
If you're playing at home. Schnaz, I wouldn't mind you doing some gym movements. A lot of people have started doing their workout plans on social media. I'd like to see what you do to keep those calves nice and tight over the lockdown months.
I do have a schedule for my calves, actually. Now you say it, so I could probably do that.
Yeah.
Not much else going on, but I do have a bit of lower body issues. I do. So, you know, there's something going on.
You're turning those cankles into calves in no time, Schnaz.
That's not really a weight issue, but yeah, sure.
I just love the cankle. Like, it's just such a good little merging. Like, it's like Brangelina. It just worked.
Is it offensive, though, if you've got one? Is it offensive?
I don't know.
Are you saying it's kind of cute? It's kind
of one
cute.
Of my mates, Brian, Tim Sheens' nephew.
Yeah.
He had the nickname the Kank going for a while.
Really,
he had some nice cankles. I think it was a self prescribed nickname. Brian, you're listening. Just write in, and we'll confirm next episode whether you gave yourself that nickname, the Kank.
Or you can tweet him at Kankles
and take a photo of your cankles while you're at it, mate.
All right. On that note, Brooks.
Anyway, thanks for the memory, Schnaz.
Thank you. This will be one that I'll have forever. We will see you later.
Marcus, bye for now, mate.
I'm sitting at home reading a periodical, and this is the call I get. My son is a bootlegger.
Ow, man.
Who put you up to this? Was it her?
All right, wait a minute. I think you've got it backwards.
My George isn't clever enough to hatch a scheme like this.
You got that right.
What the hell does that mean?
That means whatever the hell you want it to mean.
You saying you want a piece of me?
I could drop you like a bag of dirt.
You want a piece of me? You got it!